Welcome to another edition of Strange New Pod. I am your Fleet Admiral and host, Julian Brown, alongside the best bridge crew this side of the Krenim, still fucking around with time in the worst possible way. Fuck those guys. Yeah, the Krenim. Rearing their ugly heads again. So, Vice Admiral Eric is here wishing that he had a Krenim bug to send him into a loop where his ice cream bar rebuilds itself. Every 14 minutes. Captain Hawk is here. Yeah, he liked it. Captain Hawk is here hoping Michael didn't steal the field disruptor fluid from the holodeck that keeps his image stable, because you went sideways, upside down, disappeared for a good 5 minutes pre-show. Yeah. So the jury is still out, sir.
Daddy needs his medicine.
Daddy needs his medicine. Subcommander Giraffe is here wondering whether she loves or hates the Michael on Michael fighting. And I know that look. And finally, MC is here wondering if the Krenim figured out how to make one of those time buggy things hop time and other dimensions. You know what I'm getting at. You
did. I get demoted?
Did I demote you? I just didn't say your rank. No, you don't get a rank today. You're back to specialist because you time hopped. Sorry, MC.
Time hopped. Yeah.
No, Commander MC, Commander MC. Welcome back, guys. How are we doing?
We're doing great. I'm going to the other fandom. So
I think what you mean is you're going to the dark side.
I'm going to the dark side. Yes, I'm having. I had a blast at Star Wars Night at Disneyland. I encourage everybody who's a nerd to go to Disneyland this way, because this is the way. Just saying that.
I loved your cosplay so much.
It was so good.
So much.
Your makeup was amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm all about it.
When are the X-Men going to show up at Disney? They have the rights.
Oh. Dude, I'm pretty sure.
There's so many weird things with Marvel and Disney and other places.
It would be cool. This week. Michael and Rayner get caught in a Michael Burnham, This Is Your Life time loop, thanks to the, as I said before, fucking Krenim, because they did time shenanigan things during the Temporal Cold War. That's basically the episode, and it's hella good. We're going to break it all down. But speaking of the word fuck, on our show.
You already counted. You said it already.
I think like I said it like four times. So we're gonna do a little bit of a PSA on the pod tonight, because I think it's important.
We're in trouble.
Yeah, you know, I just want to preface this by saying we're gonna talk about a review that we got on the pod. And I want to preface it by saying that the review is actually a positive review. Nice things to say about the pod, 4 stars. I'm not doing this as a like, I don't want to take away like the drive or, you know, say reviewer from listening to our show, but I think that this review has had the unfortunate, I guess, what's the word I'm trying to say?
Consequence?
No, not consequence, but the unfortunate, it's something that keeps on popping up in some of the reviews that we get for the pod.
Oh yeah, it's not the first time.
I think it's important to address it. This isn't meant to call anybody out or to drive anybody away, but I think it needs to be said. First, on the level of swearing on our show, to start, our show is marked explicit on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Explicit generally means that you're going to say the word fuck more than once or twice. It's like an Eminem album or a Dre album. We have that E there. So, like, we know, okay?
Parental advisory.
Literally, that is your parental advisory. So there's that. just like some of your favorite music. And some of my favorite rides on Peloton are marked explicit, because like they throw F-bombs at me to like motivate me, like on the bike, you know, like things like that. We swear a lot. It's just the fact of life. MC thought the review was about her. I thought the review was about me. You get the point.
but it was all about me.
Well, hold on. We're getting to that. Listen, if swearing isn't your jam, and you know, like I just mean our general audience, not everybody in the chat tonight, I apologize. But at the same time, the E should tell you all that you need to know. Like, that's why it's there. From a personal standpoint, I don't consider swearing swearing. Like, I just don't believe in the stigma that it's a bad thing. I'm from Queens, then Long Island, and I live in Philly. It's been in my vocabulary since I was five. That I'm completely unapologetic about. Sorry, not sorry. This is where it gets to the unfortunate, basically the giraffe in the room. Giraffe is getting singled out in our reviews a lot. Not only for profanity, but other things. But I also wanted, before we go fully into the talking about giraffe, I don't think it's fair either to say that swearing dumbs down our conversations when some of the reviews that have been written said that our conversations are very educational and smart and well thought out.
I am fucking erudite as hell.
Yeah, like that's like say, like going back
and erudite.
That's like going back and saying like you know, like a Dre or, you know, like an Eminem album or an album with lots of fucking swearing, as I swear.
Kendrick Lamar
is dumbed down just because they swear a lot. It's not. It's just, and I don't think that that's fair. Lastly, I do want to say we've had multiple reviews single out Giraffe about her negative opinions and on shows like this, on Disco and Strange New Worlds. I'll be the first person to say that I don't agree with a lot of what Giraffe says. But
hey, come on, not a lot.
A lot.
Not a lot.
A lot.
Like MC and me, we're always agreeing.
Oh, no, I agree with you a ton, but I also disagree with you a ton. But I also think, and this is where I think this is really important, I also think that you have some of the most fair and balanced takes you'll find on any, and I will literally put this podcast up against any other fucking Star Trek podcast. Some of those fair and balanced takes you'll find. I say that being critical and drastic critical thoughts are thought out really deep and really sometimes personal, and I appreciate that. I think it's very far removed from being negative, and I think that's important to say. So I stand by her. I'll stand by anyone else on our crew who gets a bad review and get called out. I want to remind people when you write reviews, we read these. We see our names, and that sucks sometimes. So think about what you say when writing a review. End of PSA. Go ahead, Giraffe.
The thing that cracks me up, that it's true that every time there's a review and somebody's named, it's always me, which cracks me up, let's be honest. Because I feel that MC and myself, we always agree on, like, I mean, mostly agree, right?
Yeah.
And but that's never her. It's always me. And I've been called so many names in reviews that I always said I want to do a podcast where I just read the reviews, you know, like
mean
Jimmy
tweets.
Kimmel, I think they read the mean tweets.
Yeah.
I want to do that. I have that, like, water off a duck's back. I feel people have lost the habits of having disagreements and understanding that people can have other opinions. That's why having a diverse podcast is important, because when everybody agrees and everybody sees the same thing and everybody has the same backstories, same background, same, you know, ethnicity. I'm a foreigner. I grew up with a Muslim dad. I grew up with a white mom. I am a certain age. I see things differently. But it cracks me up. It does. It really makes me laugh that people are like, but her. And I'm going to add that the conversation started because I went on the French podcast and they got a one mean review, and that mean review was about me. And I'm like, holy fuck, 2-on-2.
Tara was saying that, oh my God, a new pod segment, mean reviews. And Giraffe and I have been talking about doing a mean reviews Patreon bonus pod for a really long time. So hold your beers. Listen, I don't want to do something like this very often, because I don't like it. I actually think it feels a little bit icky, but it's happened enough in reviews that I think it was important to bring up. I'll also say I need to back up what Giraffe just said 100%, because I will also put our show, and this is not to talk any shit about any other Star Trek podcast, but I will still put this show up next to theirs and say we are probably one of the top three most diverse podcasts in the Star Trek podcast, whatever you want to call it. So
it's thanks to Hawk.
It's thanks to Hawk being a hologram.
Yeah.
And with that, let's
push this over the edge.
Let's get into our thanks for our amazing patron collective at the Ready Room level and above. Hawk, the hologram, it is on you today, sir.
All right. So thank you once again to Simon Stager, Jeff Reeve, Mariah Gossett, Tallulah, Jen Stein, Tina Alexander, Joe Saporito, Noe Santos, Kang Wee, Takako Nagumo, Fernando Nogales, SMK, Laura Linderman, Colin Davidson, Jesco, Michael Graham, Emily and Travis, Gildara, Cassie, Nay Nar.
Hawk got that in one try. Who did it last week, Eric?
Good job.
Maggie Light, Tyrannicilicus, Wayne Ritz, Skonavark, Sean, Jay Howard, Anna Yurdadon, Mahalani Uchiyama, Matt Harker, Davey Willett, Tara Pollen, Slope 74, Rude Parakeet, Joshua Miller, Adam Sanders, Eris Spengen, Lanky Guy, Aaron Volkey, Carl Angoli, Michael Kwan, TJ, Mir, Caitlin, Elizabeth Dean, Jim McMahon, Connect Dot, Sedano 317, Hookah Hair, Three Fries Short, Cat Tip, Tripping the Reed Alert Over a Pineapple, Sean Manning, Congressional Baseball Fan, Chris Waterman, RHCB, Martin Simpson, Seven Rasmussen, Anna F., Norman Buchwald, David Prime Hildebrand, Taryn J. Robinson, Anson Lex, a pro, that's right. Trouble on that one. Eric the Red, Trouble, and Jamie Roberts. Thank you.
No idea what's going on.
To be fair, when I didn't do Nanar, I was laughing every time I first
I know. You guys, our Badmirals, our executive producers, our Chadiches, Simon Stager, Commander Chris, the Chief Ernesto Castagna, Chris Waterman, and Tara Pollen, thanks for keeping our Spore Drive running, our time bugs running, and all of that jazz. We love you. We love you. News. We were talking about whether to bring this up off mic or not, and this is all we're going to say. The Lower Deck Strange New Worlds news. It's out there. It's public. Our thoughts are out there about it on social media. Some of ours are. If you want to read it, go there. Obviously, the one thing I'll say is that this started as a Strange New Worlds podcast. It being renewed for season 4 is awesome. Can't wait to cover it more at the end. Heroes and Villains. Something cool happened this week, so I'm going to turn news into an ad. I'm wearing this shirt from Heroes and Villains tonight, which is like this really cool storyboard Enterprise shirt.
I love that shirt so much.
Yeah, from the motion picture. Even though it's not the same Enterprise, I'm wearing that in honor of Rod Roddenberry finally getting back the original opening credit shooting model of the Enterprise today, which has been like a years-long struggle to get back to the Roddenberrys. It finally happened with the help of the Yakudas, which is just like... So,
well, it had disappeared for like 50 years.
Yeah. So,
and it was found in a storage container.
A storage container. Yeah.
On eBay. And I was like, yeah. Good job to everybody who found it.
Yep. So that happened. So I'm wearing that shirt in honor. You can find this on heroesandvillains.com. Use our code STRANGE to get 20% off your order. They have awesome collections from, like Giraffe was talking about, Star Wars, X-Men, everything. So check it out. Let's move right along, unless anybody else has any other news. Slow news week. To the strange new loop. I said I was going to do the personal transporter, but I lied. If you had the budget for this episode, you were the director, you were the showrunner, whatever you want to call yourself, and wanted to do a few more time jumps, what other points in Disco's history would you have liked to see? Chat, let us know your answers. MC, I saw your hand first.
I already know what MC's
going to
say.
Yeah, I think exactly what I was going to say.
Go ahead.
I want to see Ethan Peck as Spock interacting with this mic.
I was ridiculous, they didn't do it.
Yes.
They really missed the opportunity here, didn't they?
It's like, get that motherfucker in a Disco. You like
with,
that,
with the like, beard. Get him
with
a big
the beard. Get him to walk through a corridor. That is all I want. That is all.
See, me personally, I would want it to be like the Spock, like right before they start to get along again. So it's like really hostile Spock, but Michael like actually does see him and is just like, you know.
Imagine if they just gave each other like a dirty look and don't even say a word to each other. That would have worked well.
I mean, yeah.
Well, isn't like Spock before Talos or like at that moment still like not experiencing time as linear?
Yeah.
So it would have been a good cameo. It would have been such like interesting in the story because he's also like timey-wimey before he gets to Talos 4, right? Am I wrong? Yeah. So
also just give it to me because Ethan Peck in Discovery is chef's kiss.
Yeah, that's the best Spock we had.
Yeah.
And then they cut his bangs.
Eric, I see you doing the
They went back to the building of the disco.
Yes.
And they didn't have Philippa Georgiou show up. Like Michael's mentor, like the first Philippa Georgiou. Like that would have been amazing.
That would have cost so much money, but yes, I said if you had the budget,
I'm gonna add. I think that there is this moment just before she jumps where she says goodbye to Sarek and Amanda in season two, and they're they're on board of the Discovery and they're gonna leave just before the Battle of Control, and I think that would have been great that she had if she had seen Amanda.
Yeah.
And she's not as expensive as
Georgiou.
Michelle Yeoh.
They both live in Toronto.
Yeah.
And they're both in Toronto. Yes. See?
Yep. Yep. Mm. Who else?
Hawk.
I know. Hawk. I'm trying to think of one, but like, really, they did a great job kind of covering everything, you know? Like,
well, we just keep on throwing out guest stars.
Well, no, there's season two when Una is around. That could have been cool to know that Una knows what happened but never talked to anybody or something like that or helped her, you know, on the down low.
Yeah.
Oh, I have such like a fucking trip that they could have done if they had gone back to Magic Makes the Sandman Go Mad.
Oh my God, that would have been crazy.
But imagine if they had and he somehow got stuck in some like double
like another time loop within a time loop.
I had that thought and I'm like, if they did that, I don't think I would ever recover from a time travel episode ever again.
There's another thing is that there's also Pike who could have been interesting because then he goes to Boreth and he messes up with time. So that would have been also an interesting thing. Like there's so many people who are messed up in times that could have helped the story.
Yeah. Yep. We have some good ones in the chat. Yum Yum Pod, I would have liked to see Lorca be a total freak. Heck, it would have been nice to see Ash Tyler to show off how much better a partner Book is.
Damn.
The shade of it all.
Are you f***ing kidding me?
Beautiful. Wow. Beautiful. Wonderful. Jim McMahon, I know why they didn't want to pay Jason Isaacs, but I would have liked to see Burnham interact with Lorca. Yeah, I agree. A lot of Michelle Yeoh costs money. True. Yum Yum Pod. Cornwell should have returned. Would have loved to see that. Dana agrees with bringing back Georgiou. Jim really liked just having Ariam and Nielsen in a scene together. And Nielsen. Sorry, Nielsen wasn't in there. Same actress for a season. But
they also had Bryce show up too.
Yeah, they had Bryce show up. I really would have loved to see them jump to the moment. And you're talking about like interdimensional timey-wimey shenanigans, the moment that Disco and Mirror Disco merged and Lorca shut and them having to deal with that for like 18 minutes, that would have been really cool. But we already know from like the trailers and nonsense that there might be doing some mirror nonsense. So trailers.
I didn't watch the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just
didn't watch our review of the trailer.
No,
I can't because then it would spoil the season for me. Yeah.
Hey, you remember that in the trailer review, I actually knocked out the main plot.
Oh yeah, by the way, I was going to mention that in my PSA about the review. I'm like, if Giraffe wasn't on the show, we wouldn't have like the Giraffe was right sticker. Like we wouldn't have the meme. We wouldn't have Giraffe literally predicting every single season. She's a prophet.
I'm a prophet. I'm not a profane, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it was a misspelling.
Oh yeah, Tara didn't watch our trailer review either, so this is the first she's hearing about the mirror shenanigans.
Just thought of my strange new loop.
I like it. Go.
Alternate plot point to tonight's story. What if Michael had encountered herself pre-Battle of the Binary Stars?
But she wouldn't be on Discovery.
She was on the Shenzhou.
I mean, I like the idea, but
She could have talked to Saru pre. Oh no, he was on the Shenzhou also. Mm-hmm. He was on the Discovery. Stamets, but he's already talking with her. Like, yeah, Kahlberg.
Yeah.
That would have not stopped anything anyway.
No. Yeah. This is good. Where was Nahn? Where was Nahn?
Detmer.
Oh yeah, Detmer.
Detmer was on the Shenzhou.
Detmer was on the Shenzhou.
Yep.
Yeah. That whole thing was
Yep.
Anyway,
that was a fun strange loop. Oh yeah, where's Landry being a total weirdo? Yeah, unfortunately, she was at the shuttle with Lorca and Saru. Those would have been some good cameos too. Speaking of being a weirdo. Let's face the strange. It is our review. I can do transitions sometimes. It is our review of Face the Strange, episode 504 of Star Trek Discovery. Our order tonight will go MC, Eric, Hawk, Giraffe, followed by myself. Let's do this. We're going to do this review like we did in the old days, just because this is a bottle episode and it's one thing. So we're going to do our thoughts and then go into two sidebars. And go in the mailbag. Maybe a short show. Right. I lied. That will never happen.
It's already 10.
MC, your thoughts on episode 504.
I said this off mic before we started. I was really tired when I was watching this episode, and I thought I was going to fall asleep during it. And about 5 minutes in, I'm just like, I am so fucking awake. Like, I am so here for this. And I think this was mentioned in the mailbag a couple of times, really reminded me of the Voyager episode Shattered. But this is like, that one was like very campy and very fitting for Voyager in the look at all of like the insane shit that has happened to us. Meanwhile, this was, I think, done a lot more serious as a character study of Michael. And I really liked that. I thought it worked very well. And this is a very good episode to have for the last season, which I don't think that I'm pretty sure this episode was probably totally in the can by the time they knew the series was ending, but it works so well for that because it's like this nice retrospective. I love a clip show that's not actually a clip show. And of course, also this made me think of Magic Makes the Sanest Man Go Mad, which is like one of my top favorite episodes of Discovery, and I think that this one is now. I apparently really like Discovery having time travel shenanigans because this is already one of my favorite episodes. And I mean, like when they had that moment in like the future, and I actually like just went, "Are they doing Calypso?"
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, no, this is really good. A very good showcase of Sonequa Martin-Green and Callum Keith Rennie, and Anthony Rapp as well, because he did have quite a big role in this. I kept on thinking it's like, oh, I want Spock to turn up. I want Lorca to turn up. I want somebody like, I mean, I know they had Arium, which was good, but Arium doesn't have the same cachet as some of the.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, there is the emotional element, but
it was still great to see one of the old captains.
Yeah. It was really great to see her.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric.
I was talking to Hawk about this before the show, and we were saying how much this is like this, how fast has jumped to like our top disco episodes. And this is probably my second favorite episode behind Unification
3. Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Like, I love this episode so much. I love time travel. I've said this multiple times on this show. and having a fun bottle episode is just, it just tickles my heart. There was a little bit of the cynic in me who was like, I wonder if they're doing this just so that they can, you know, pluck off little things to be like, this is the last season. We want to make sure we hit all these, you know, beats before the end of the show. You know, I don't care. It's still such a good episode. I like seeing the different eras of disco and seeing, you know, where it came from, where it's going. I love the whole mystery aspect of this. Rainer versus Michael throughout the whole time, their relationship grew immensely over this episode. And I love that. I like seeing that Rainer's 20 seconds of getting to know you actually paid off.
Yes, right?
Hilarious. The Michael versus Michael fight was amazing. Like seeing Sinequa Martin Green play the old Michael, like the totally broken and, you know, scared, not broken, but, you know, she's scared about where she's headed. Mm-hmm. She's unsure of what she's doing versus the now Michael. It's such a breath of fresh air. Just seeing her like try to be like, you know what? I was you. I'm just trust me that you're going to get to a good place. And then even Rainer says that later to an amazing effect. Seeing how much the crew has changed from the first season to now and their distress. And then later when Michael's talking to them at the future present and they're like, yeah, we wouldn't have never believed you. That was amazing. Bringing back people that aren't on the show anymore. Hannah Chessman, who was Arium 2, was nice to see.
Yeah.
Seeing Ronnie Rowe as Bryce come back. Like, those are people like I miss Bryce. I liked him as a character.
Yeah.
The fact that he's not back. It would have been nice to have who was Arium 1 who ended up becoming
Nielsen. Sarah Mitch.
Sarah Mitchell.
Or Sarah Mitic, sorry.
Mitic, yeah. It would have been nice to see her again. Also, Sarah Mitic, Hamilton Hawk. She's from Hamilton.
She's she got transferred to the Voyager.
Voyager J.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Voyager J.
Some people are so lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I go to Voyager J.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of what else. Stamets, again, as always. Anthony Rapp is always wonderful. I like that he played off the fact that he used to be so grumpy in the earlier seasons. He's like, you know, they understand. I was a little bit much back then. And it was nice seeing the evolution of disco in one episode.
Like, yeah.
It sort of paid off for all of us who've been watching it for such a long time to be like, oh, remember back then? That was nice. Oh, remember that time? Oh, we didn't get to see the ship being built, but that's cool. Stuff like that. It's nice for disco fans. This whole episode was sort of fun just to watch all the Easter eggs. And this is, oh God, I love this episode.
Yeah, agreed. I know what you're saying now, Hawk, pre-show where you were. I did not put you in this list. Hawk, you are actually up.
So building off what Eric said, yeah, this is a love letter, but it's multiple love letters kind of just crammed into one magnificent episode. You know, it's a love letter to the bottle episode. It's a love letter to Bowie's changes. We were talking about that off mic. A lot of those lyrics really apply to this. It's a love letter to the Star Trek timey-wimey loop episodes, which always seem to fall into our top 10 categories in that, but I don't know why. They just do. They just work in this situation. And lastly, this is a love letter to Captain Michael Burnham.
Yes.
In its last season, it's important to be able to reflect on her journey to the captain's chair and, like, not just, like, you know, Burnham and Sinequa Martin Green's portrayal of her in that, and it's been a really complex journey. The biggest criticism we always see leveled at the show is how unabashedly emotional it is and its main characters' interactions. And we've said this before, this is not a bad thing. This is Discovery's niche. And one thing I'm really glad is Discovery has never really abandoned its mission statement in doing so. You know, it's always meant to be like a different kind of leadership. And I know time is going to be a lot more favorable to the show for people when they go back and rewatch it.
I don't think there's a doubt about that. I really don't. Just because of all the like same level shit that Deep Space Nine got when it was fresh. I mm-hmm. think that mm-hmm. this show is going to be beloved in a decade or so. So I like that, Hawk.
So yeah, not only that, it was great to see Burnham and Rayner finally work out the dynamics of how this command structure was going to work in this episode, because obviously they were it was wildly clashing. Rayner is forced to confront the fact that the universe he lives in has changed now, as Michael tells him the burn's over, you know, which means his command style has got to get up to speed or the new reality is going to overtake it. And this was really how key his interactions with Stamets were in this episode and that, because they're a little bit both in the same boat, right? With Stamets and that, and the fame of his spore drive is kind of withered, and he's got to face like acclimate himself to an even greater challenge now, and with the progenitor's technology. Just pretty much everything about this worked. The episode written by Sean Cochran, directed by Lee Rose. It's in my top five of Discovery. Where it lands in overall Star Trek, and then still going to wind up on high up on the list.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Nice. Dref.
Yes.
Yes. Let's go.
Oh.
You can do it. Somebody was talking about Waterboy today, and now I have that stuck in my head. You can do it. Anyway,
this episode brought to you by Liquid Death.
This episode did not go where I thought it was gonna go. Right away, we got like the timey-wimey drum thing, you know, and I love the fact that they went very fast to like figuring out the scientific solution of it, because each of them brought a different piece of the solution. Reynard knows what a time bug is. Michael knows that Stamets is out of loop. Stamets knows that he can figure out a solution. Michael has already done most of the math with Zora and all this. And I like the teamwork. I thought this was going to be a Michael episode, but it's definitely not a Michael episode. It's a Rayner
episode. It's a Rayner episode.
Yeah. I thought that, you know, throughout this season, you see Michael grow and change and go through her grief of everything, of losing, you know, her family, losing her mother over and over again. Let's be honest. Losing her captain, losing her crew, finding them again, losing her brother, finding him again, and learning to not define herself by others, but define herself by herself. And then she's come on full circle, because now she's so close to her crew and knows people so well and knows herself so well that she doesn't have to experience grief, reflect on her relationship with people, because she has done that and she has grown, and now she's steady and secure in this relationship. So they would have done this episode like two seasons ago. It would have been about Michael seeing Spock. It would have been about Michael seeing Amanda. It would have been about Michael seeing all these people she's lost and like processing her grief and everything. And then in the end being like, oh, I'm stronger and I'm more set. And now I'm more together, you know, because there are all these people. But so when they started jumping and she's like, it's the right angel, I was like, ah, it's the right angel. I was so excited because love season two of Discovery. I'm like, well, yeah, weirdos, you know. But slowly I realized that Michael doesn't have work to do on herself anymore. She's fully accomplished, she's fully stable, she's fully herself, and she knows who she is, what she does. It's like a woman in her 40s, like I feel that, you know. For real, you know, like people tell you, oh, your youth is the most important. No, a 20-year-old is a dumb motherfucker. I was a dumb motherfucker. I mean, I didn't have money, I didn't know shit, I defined myself about like people around me. I tried to please everybody around me, and I had no social clues. I was not able to read people. I got manipulated. I got abused. I got lied to. Now I'm in my 40s. I'm like, no, I called the shots. I know how to read people. I know what's good for me. I know what I like. I know what I want to do. I know how to say goodbye. I know how to say no. And this is Michael now. And I was so happy about seeing her being like, you know, the only moment when she met herself, and that's where you see, actually, this moment was very important. I didn't like it, but then I really liked it. You're like, so spot on.
I know you too well.
I didn't like it because I thought it was too easy and it was too expected. But at the same time, I think I really liked it because it really shows you that, like, the growth and the stability of Michael in season 5. So I really like that. And also that she makes choices she fully assumes. But then it's about Reynar, right? Reynar is the person that needs to go through that growth because he didn't have the opportunity to actually reflect on who he truly is. He's in reaction to things, you know, rather than action. And that's very important. That's very interesting to see that. At the beginning, I was, oh, I think that, you know, he's that kind of character and that's fine, but actually he's way more than that. And that's what they're trying to get out of him. And yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. Jet Reno was amazing. I always mm-hmm. love seeing Jet Reno, and I love when she shoots people even more. so that was great. I was disappointed in not seeing bigger Camero. I would have loved to see Lorca. I would have loved to see Georgiou. I know it's not possible.
No, you know what, though, Giraffe? You know what, though? I think that, and I think it goes to what Michelle Paradise said. I think had they known they were getting canceled at this point, they would have gone for those cameos, which is like what's sad, right? Like they got what they could for the episode, not knowing that they were getting canceled yet.
I know Lorca would not have brought so much, but I mean, I would have brought to me a lot because I would have been happy, you know. But I think Spock would actually have befitted that story because Spock goes through the same process than his sister. With many years difference, because that's the same thing. He's somebody that doubts himself and doesn't know and defines himself how people define him until he realized that, no, he's simply Spock and he can be himself and he can be out of the categories that people want to put him in. And then that's the Spock we see in TOS, and then that we see in the motion picture, and then we see in Voyage Home, and then we see in TNG, you know, that person that has basically created himself and is detached from, like, judgment of others, like in Unification 1 and 2, you know, that person. And I think that Michael seeing his brother, you know, so young and so troubled and so broken and so sad and so, you know, unable to figure himself out as she was, knowing what she learned on Nivar in Unification 3 and how, you know, important, like how into himself he becomes so much that he changed the destiny of, like, planets. I think that would have been beneficial for Spock and for her and, you know, and befitting to the story. But, you know, I don't know. Ethan Peck is an expensive bitch. I don't know why. Listen. I want reason.
It costs a lot to cut that hair, baby. Let's go.
Somebody give me some reason. And there, I have one pet peeve. I have two pet peeves. Okay. One is the 15 hours ago. They need to stop doing this. Please stop doing this. Fair. I mean, they did it once, they do it twice. I mean, it's not, but, like, I'm like, this is no 90s. This is such a weird way.
This is so Battlestar season 1.
Right? I'm like, okay, that's the mood. Sure, why not? And another thing that is always triggering me in shows is when they're like, you have 1 minute, and that 1 minute is actually 17 minutes. And I'm like, no. That was more than 3 minutes, my friend. Like...
Wait, do you mean the 60 seconds to convince old Michael was not longer than 60 seconds?
Dude, and it was not like, you know, I'm not like counting the second. It was like obviously way longer, you know, like at least.
There was time dilation going on.
There you go.
Let's say that. I fully thought young Michael would just shoot somebody for the example, and that was something that missed. Like, I thought she would have shot, like, Stamets in the knee or something like that.
That was the warning shot.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it.
Nice. So what's fun about this episode and what I love about it, and yeah, like being up there in favorite disco episodes, is that it threw people off this week in a really fun way. It's fun sometimes, and then completely just fucking irritating on others. Seeing some of these episodes ahead of time and then people coming up with crazy theories and saying things in the spoiler chat and you can't say anything about it. But like, I loved the discourse about the bug being placed last week and people being like, oh man, like I hope it's not just like, you know, another like tracker plot because it's like overdone and like this and that. And I love that that just like got thrown just completely out. And this is like Krenim tech, and P. Lewis put it perfectly. I like that the bug wasn't tracking them, but messing with time. Nice twist. Cause like you would expect it, right? Like it's such a TV trope to be a tracker. And it just wasn't. Mm-hmm. It was something completely worse. And that's the other thing that I really want to talk about, why I love this episode so much. And it's something that Hawk brought up. And that's this show having the bad crowd of all the fucking disco haters and all those people just who whine and cry, this isn't my Star Trek. I've been a Star Trek fan since the 1960s. My friends, yeah, that too. Listen, one of the things that this season so far and this episode is doing well is making sure that Discovery connects to all of the other Trek series. It is already connected to TNG, for better or worse. It is connected to Deep Space Nine already. And
I had forgotten.
I'm sorry. Trigger warning. TNG? I should have put a trigger warning, Giraffe. And now it's connected to Voyager Forever, which I think mm-hmm. is so freaking dope, right? Because of course the Krenim got involved in the Temporal Wars. Of course they did. And mm-hmm. of course they were like, oh, you remember that guy from 1,000 years ago who almost like really fucked up time, and that Janeway chick, like she really just saved our asses there. Yeah, let's make something smaller and worse. And they do. And I love it. And I love how this not just connects to older Trek, but it connects to the lore that season 3 created, right? That time travel is illegal. And it is a criminal offense, so that something like this Krenim chronophage, is found on the black market, you know? It's just everything about this era, which makes it really sad that the show is leaving, is so interesting. And I wish that we got spinoffs about some of the other lore, like courier stuff, black market stuff, temporal Cold War stuff, burn stuff. Man, I'd love I don't know how you get someone better than Callum Keith Renee. I will not stop singing the praises of that man. We already did it last week, but love that man for decades now. This was so much his episode, and he acted his ass off in this episode. Holy crap. Just the realization of finally figuring out what this thing is, like going back to his days as a captain during the burn, right? Oh yeah. Damn, like this is one of these nasty things, like that, having that knowledge. It's so cool. We're going to talk about it in a minute here. The obvious connection to Calypso, and it not being as easy as you think it is, because it's not, but we're going to talk about how it could be and how it probably is. There's just so many little pieces in this episode that make it one of the best episodes of the series, I think. The Michael book. Stuff. Sorry, naked book. I, you know, I think they're, yeah. you know, they're doing the slow roll of getting them back together, and this was like part one.
But we love like
remember Star Trek what she's missing.
Some male exactly. eye candy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
we're here for it.
Yeah. Gene writes, "Have Sisko or Wesley show up." Yeah. Hey, they could. Mm. Yeah, they're out of time. I really loved it. Yeah, and, you know, I got to agree with the Giraffe. Like, the Michael on Michael stuff wasn't actually, like, my favorite part of this episode. It worked. It was cool. I was more here for her stuff and reconnecting with her crew when she was a mutineer. And having Arium be the one that gets to get the whole crew to rally around her like, I loved that. And getting to see Hannah Cheeseman back was just awesome. The other thing I want to say about that is just a very little thing. Tilly has grown so much as a character in five seasons, right? Like, she and Mary Wiseman acts the character so much differently. But how quickly she was able to turn back around into Cadet Tilly, mm-hmm. when, like, Michael's like, yeah, like, you think I'm going to knife you. And she just does that little, yeah, sorry. Like, you know, and that voice, it was so good. And it was so believable. This is a fantastic episode of not just Discovery, but of Star Trek. And I'm so happy that we got it. Oh, boy. Yeah, let's talk about the Calypso in the room, because, man, this is it, folks. I will say, I could be wrong, I think we're not getting anything after this. I think this is where you decide to put the pieces together and make Calypso what you will. So, Face of Strange may have finally answered that much sought-after question. We see that one of the possible futures, the Breen have attacked. They got the technology from Maul and Locke and destroyed everything, right? Disco's been abandoned for 30 years. Now, this is not the story of Calypso, but why it's connected is the song that Zora is humming and the window in which she is watching Michael and Rayner. Those are two really important notes. So,
another ad. There's another ad going on.
Yeah, that's really annoying. Sorry about that, guys. As Disco in that episode, sorry, I'm a little bit. Yeah, that Disco in Calypso has been abandoned for 1,000 years, right? And it's also not the refit. It is the old Discovery. So that's important to note too. But we do, as I mentioned, have Zora humming that very familiar tune. Something to think about here, and I'll get all your takes about this. If this time bug in this episode was wreaking havoc on the ship, and there was already one possible future where they didn't succeed and the Breen win, right? Who's to say that in the other futures or past that you know they went to, one of them being before they're at the Battle of Control, that Stamets knows what's going on and that thing's not stopping. He forces them to abandon ship and have Discovery go through that wormhole unmanned. Zora will still evolve into Zora because she's already started. So no one's looking for Discovery in the 32nd century. So it could be just gone, like not looked after for 1,000 years. I want to get your thoughts on this too, because Zora also calls seeing them a dream, hinting that maybe Calypso was a dream, which I'm not sure about. A lot to unpack here. We'll get your takes. We'll go in the same order, MC.
Well, I think one thing that has become clear with Star Trek, especially in the last couple of years, is that time is always in flux. Like, you'll always have Khan come up, even though it might be 30 years after it was supposed to be, because, you know, temporal shenanigans happen. And it's clear with, like, this episode, like, that Calypso could happen. And I don't think that there is anything to say that it's not yet, or that it hasn't. I mean, everything can happen in whatever timeline. You know, I'm big on timelines because of Kelvin. It's a very confusing question to bring up because, you know, like you said, it's, you know, before the refit, but it's 1,000 years in the future. How does this exactly work out? Considering Discovery did come 1,000 years into the future, maybe it's splintered.
Joe brings up in the chat that he remembers at one point that they mentioned two ships being detected in the wormhole. But would the Red Angel suit be considered a ship?
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
I would say yes, but...
Yeah.
It is, but maybe not, though.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe there was two Discoveries and one of them becomes the Discovery from Calypso. There's a million ways you could do it. I don't think we're ever going to actually get an answer on the show, But that's what comic and book writers are for. And if not them, fan fiction writers.
I mean, Michelle Paradise has said as late as 2021, which is 3 years ago now, but like into
season... It feels
season,
like 100 years
ago. I know. Ago, into like season three already, that they are eventually going to get to those answers and they're actually going to do it. I don't know how much truth is behind that, but maybe... I don't know. I feel like this was it, and this is where you kind of choose your own adventure with it. Who's up next, Eric?
Me. I love multiple timelines. Like MC, I'm a fan of the Kelvinverse, so I love that this could possibly be a random timeline. Like it could be just a splinter. I wonder if it has been abandoned for 1,000 years. Would the nacelles still just be out, or would they be docked? Like, we don't know how.
But it's not just the nacelles, right? Oh, it's got like it's got the nacelles. It's still just it's got the main registry. Like it's definitely pre-refit.
It is the old one.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Like we don't know how the show's gonna end, so we don't know. Yeah. Maybe they'll have multiple discoveries. They did it in TNG.
It's another discovery.
It was the pack legs all along.
Maybe they'll do their own version of like the Discovery C showing up, and then the old Discovery going up, and then there's three different discoveries. That'd be cool. Although, you know.
And a really old Jean-Luc Gollum on board one of them.
Jesus. Bury that Gollum already.
I like the idea that this could be random, like Doctor Strange just seeing this in a different timeline. Like, that would be cool. Like, I like that we don't have to have all the answers. Like, that was a cool story. Maybe it's a possible future for one of the past, you know, multiple times they fucked around with time. Like, who knows? I like the idea that it's that Zora still evolves to a point where she misses her crew, because eventually they're all going to die anyway. She will eventually miss them. So,
yeah. Hawk.
Yeah, I mean, the thought that there could have been two discoveries at some point, it's not that crazy. I mean, let's face it.
There's lots of especially with time and wormholes. Yeah.
And lots of precedents within, you know, if like, you know, Riker, there could be two Rikers and that, two Boimlers and that. They could have somehow split during that trip to the future and that. I mean, time was all in flux and that. So, I mean, the conditions were there.
So you're saying what Kung is saying, that maybe the other ship was the Kelvinverse disco.
The other ship detected, yeah. So, I mean, like, the idea had flashed and I was like, I kind of like, no.
What is happening?
Kelvinverse has been mentioned way too many times in this episode. Sorry.
You can't do that anymore. Not that I'm on the show.
I can and I will.
But to continue in that, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility in that. But personally for me, Calypso itself, it can and should maybe stay just its own separate thing in that, you know, it's like it's canon, but it's also outside of canon and that. It's like, you know, one of those untouchable kind of stories in that, because really the story is about Zora and that, and it's like the intense loneliness of 1,000 years. Yeah. You know? And it's haunting. It's beautiful. And I don't really feel the need to kind of, you know, steer the story in a direction, you know, where we find out exactly what happened in that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it needs it.
Yep. Draft.
It doesn't need it, but I need it. Like, first of all, bring back Aldis Hodge to Star Trek.
I agree.
Yes. Because if there's one actor that has played a Trekkie over and over again, it is him. And he's awesome. I mean, DC did him dirty. Bring him to Star Trek. For real. I'm not kidding. It would be awesome. And we saw in Calypso, he was incredible. And he's so hot also. Like, come on.
I was going to say, you can't have him and David Ajala in the same episode. That's too much.
No, you would sweat to death. You would just sweat to death. Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, like, it's the Lazarus effect, right?
Calypso is like is a beautiful episode, first of all, because I love the interpretation of Ulysses, and you know that it's a very well written episode in reference of the Odyssey. It has like so many hints and so many things and so many like sentences and words and like ways to make it a Star Trek. We know that Voyager is like literally the Odyssey, you know, and it's very, I love when Star Trek does classical reception because it's very often beautifully done. Let's be honest. It's one of the things they don't fuck up so much. So no, Calypso is a beautiful episode. And I think that, you know, trying to explain it by like time travel, different like, you know, like universes, it's a bit boring. I'm sorry, you guys, but like Star Trek does it over and over again. And I think that they were not ready for the reception of Calypso, that people would love it.
I agree
so
with
much.
That completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they were like, oh shit, you know, like yeah. we should do something with this. I think the sole purpose of Calypso is to just push and open the Star Trek timelines, because as much Discovery jumped 900 years in the future, to be able to like stop for Star Trek to keep being future for us, because let's be honest, we're getting very close to to Archer, we're like closer and closer, you know. It's
what's it, like 30 years till first contact?
Not
yeah
far.
40 yeah 30 30 something 37 39 I don't remember. We're getting, it's going to become our, it's going to become present. Like, I don't know if Star Trek will like last 100 years. We never know. But I love the fact that they let open doors to like, you know, continue being science fiction. So I think that's important. I think discovering being lost for 1,000 years is not really crazy, because we saw the Roman ship in the first episode being like lost for 800 years and like, they had no clue. The thing is that, why is there nobody on board? You know, he sees no bodies. He sees no skeletons, no nothing, no mummies, no nothing.
Calypso,
you know?
Does just, say
it's
they
not
abandoned
just Michael
ship.
And, it's everybody.
And abandoned ship and told to stay at those coordinates.
So, yeah.
Why is that?
They went somewhere. Like, but that's a whole crew. That's a lot of people. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, I think it's a beautiful episode. I do think it needs a tie-in to Discovery, not an explanation, but just like a door, like a very clear door of like when or where it is, you know. The music that Zora plays, yeah, I thought that we were gonna be at that moment, but like she's clearly not at the right coordinate, and I think it would have been so easy to make it so.
Yeah, I, you know? Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like kind of like a missed opportunity.
And it gives people closure if they had done that.
Yeah, yeah. Like the fact that she's still at you know, the Federation headquarters. I'm like, oh well, that is not Calypso.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that maybe, you know, it could have been like so simple than like seeing a taco plate on the table.
Right. Oh.
Mm. You know, that they were just after the what happened. And Zora could still explain that the brain did the thing and whatever, you know?
Yep.
And then they would have been like, oh shit, they missed him.
And that explains
like,
why his people were at war with the Federation too. Like, it started a whole conflict, because we do hear him call the Federation, the Vidrash or something, whatever they called him in the second episode.
Vidrash.
So.
And so like the destruction of the Federation by the Breen and all this, maybe there was a war, there was more things. And then like, it was known that the Federation like open that case of like finding that weapon that killed everybody. You know, it would have been like, it would have like opened the story so much more. Yeah. I think it was a bit lacking. I clearly think it's it, but I still have like one maybe hypothesis. We know that, spoiler a little bit about Section 31 if you don't want to hear about it, but I mean, it's not a spoiler because they told about it, but we know it's going to tie in with yesterday's Enterprise.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday's Discovery?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. You know? Yep. And maybe that will be the explanation for Calypso.
Yeah.
Because definitely it's before the refit. So, you know, what happens here? Maybe that's like one more.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
to open this. But yeah.
I'm very much with Colin. It should remain a romantic mystery. I really like that. And I do completely agree with what Giraffe said. they had no idea what they were doing. And not every one of those short treks is canon. So there's something to be said about it taking off. It is a great short trek. I think I've gone on record a couple times saying it's overrated. I watched it again. I take that back. I don't think it's overrated. It's very good. I'm fine with this being it, and you get to kind of decide for yourself what happened, and you just have that little bit of a hint from it here. I don't think I need any more. If they do, fine. That's cool. But and I'm, you know, I think I saw some people like saying, well, if it's a dream, that's kind of lame. But I don't know. You know, she's all by herself on a ship after it's been attacked. Maybe she did dream up the whole thing. She's not just an AI. She is an organism. She is a being. She can dream. So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility either. Yeah, we'll have to see where it goes. I don't think it is going anywhere else after this, but you never know.
I mean, if you're going to dream up someone, you dream up
Aldous Hodge. Yeah.
I mean, no lies.
No lies detected. A lot of you guys already talked about it in your thoughts about the episode, but we'll do one more go around about the final time jump to Lorca's discovery, Arium in command while they're out on an away mission. We do get the return of Hannah Cheeseman as Arium, and that discovery that is still under the command of Lorca. Michael's still, like, I think a couple of days fresh of being on board, still has that, you know, that label of being a mutineer. She has to fight herself. Rayner has to learn fast how to use his people skills, I think, in one of the best scenes in the episode. And Stamets has to learn how to be a grumpy old man again. What do we think about this final time jump and just the kind of the emotional finale of it? Same order, MC.
I think my favorite part, the one that really stood out to me, I mean, first of all, I mean, it was great seeing Arium as Arium, because I know, like, in her final episode, like, we had, like, the hints of her coming back, but this is actually Arium. And when Michael says she'd sacrifice herself, and Tilly's like, oh, Arium would never do that. And Arium's just like, yes, I absolutely would. It was such a good moment, and it really brought this emotionality to Arium, as emotional as that episode is, that the fact that it was not a decision that was made just in the moment. I mean, I know, like, she forgot it and everything because timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, but that she even knows at this point that if that hypothetical were to come up, that's exactly what she would do. So it's very, very beautiful to see that that's just who Arium is. Mentioning Lorca and then not having him show up, I mean, I felt so fucking teased.
It's like the new trend of Discovery to mention him and not have him show up. It, like, happens in Terra Firma as well.
Yeah. Seeing Michael, like, the, you know, probably, you know, episode two Michael or whatever, like, she doesn't even have, like, a badge yet. I don't even know what to say. It's just so weird. I did like that Michael said it'll be a long road, because then, of course, Faith of the Heart started playing in my head.
Sure did.
Same.
and Rayner, it's such a great continuation from the last episode, because I was kind of critical of him in the last episode. And it's like, oh, they actually paid it off very nicely. See, I like this. This is why Discovery is so good, because you can't just watch one episode of Discovery in, you know, a vacuum. And you've got to watch all of Discovery, because things that happen matter.
Yep, agreed. Eric?
I talked about this a lot in my beginning part, but what else to talk about? The chat between Stamets and Lorca. Oh my god, we said
he's on the brain now.
Exactly.
He's on the brain.
Press the button.
Get off my bridge.
Sorry.
I hope that fanfiction exists.
Probably now. The Rayner and Stamets chat was wonderful, and just having Rayner sort of coming down and, you know, realizing where he has to meet people, and it paying off even just a couple minutes later, or multiple minutes in that timeline. I love that Rainer, when he talks to Reese, he says Gen, like his first name first. Like he went personal right away. And I think that was a big step for him. Like to be like, this is where I'm gonna be personalized with you. This is how I reach out to you and how I connect. And then he talks about ships because he's maybe a shiphead too. I don't know. I don't know if that's a real thing
from Rainer. I think he's a shiphead. I think Rainer's a shiphead.
I could see that too.
I mean, he's talking about a ship that existed hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So I think that, yeah, you gotta know.
Yeah, you met really sailors. Yeah.
Have you met sailors? Like, they can talk about ships that are like 300 years old and be like, you know, they had like that many things. And you're like, how do you know that?
They're shipheads.
That's fair. Again, seeing the old crew on the bridge was just wonderful. And seeing Arium in charge and everything that MC said previously is spot on. And then again, I liked seeing Bryce back. I miss him. I don't know where he went, but you know,
he's working with Kovic on like some super secret project. And then disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was nice seeing him again and actually taking charge and being not just a background being like, oh yeah, remember him? He actually was part of the whole thing. Other than that, like everything I said about Michael facing Michael and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hawk.
I'm glad I did get to talk about Michael facing Michael and that. I don't know if it was necessary. I'm just glad it was there because like I had a lot of fun watching that part of the episode. You know, Michael now, as we see here in command versus Michael, just a couple weeks into being like, you know, basically hijacked and transported to Discovery without her, you know, pretty much without her consent. You could really see what was happening in her mind, seeing like Michael in there, like, you know, being, it's like, hey, I need you to be cool in that, but I think we're going to have to do something crazy in that with the ship and her, like, just like reacting, like probably the only time I've ever seen her angry, you know, because like she's being like forced into some choice in that where it's like, am I going to be a mutineer again? And then, of course, the fight. The fight was really well directed. Like, I love the good choreography. Yeah, well choreographed. The camera work was great. Whether it was necessary, now I'm glad it was there. And that, and as it, because this was, you know, largely about like Michael and her growth and that. And it's like seeing her at that the worst point versus like, you know, at where she is now. Like, yeah. I don't know what more can I say about that.
Stardance Supreme, new to the chat. If so, welcome, Stardancer. I've never seen that username before. So if this is your first time, welcome. Writes, Captain Michael seeing her feral younger self was the coolest thing ever. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty awesome. Dref.
I love seeing Arium because I think we brush over how much her death has meant for Michael a lot. And how terrible it was, because I think that's the first time she accepts being unable to save, to do anything about saving people, which she's constantly trying to do, like throughout season one, right? Like Battle of the Binary Stars, and then like a Givorin again and again and again and again. And that's the moment when like she accepts that she has not a hand on like people's fate and let go of Arium in like a terrible way. I don't remember what Spock tells her, but he tells her something about like how she feels she's responsible for everybody or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And I think that's the first time where she's like, well, no, I can't. And I think it's an important, an important thing to learn when you're a captain. But yeah, I feel it was like everybody is way too like gullible. Like, I know they love her, but like, have they met Romulans? Do you think they don't know your first name and that you're a shiphead and that you like the crossfield? They know everything. They will.
Always gotta bring up the Romulans,
dude.
I said it was going to be a Romulan night for Draft when she goes with like the Dodurodex above her, the poster behind her. there's more somewhere. The green.
Like, if Peacock season one has taught me anything, they will lie to you into oblivion. Like, for real. Like, I'm just surprised. I mean, it's good that they did believe everybody because, you know, nobody died. But it's just like, you're going to convince a guy to not shoot you when you're like a guy out of place with the wrong uniform that never met you in the engineering because he knows you're a shiphead? That's light, my friend. That is very light. I'm sure this guy is like posting on forums everywhere on the internet about the crossfield lines and so on. Like that, like you go through his like internet search history and you wouldn't know that. You would know all of this.
Never go through anybody's search history.
Listen, I'm like, that was a beautiful moment that took way more than 3 minutes, but I'm just surprised that nobody does more research on things.
I mean, Yummy and Pod put it pretty funny that the Lorca era crew was so easily swayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And it's true that they've never met Romulans at that time.
No, they haven't.
That's what I was going to say. To be fair, it was much more likely to be a shapeshifter than it was to be a Romulan.
Yeah, right. But like post-Dominion, nobody will believe your crap.
So oh, no.
You're going to get
shot.
No,
you get shot. You get shot. They wouldn't even throw you the brig. You'd just be dead.
You think Shaw would be like, oh, yeah, indeed. I like the line of the... No. You know that.
No, I need to get a medal for it, too.
Yeah, right?
Oh, damn.
But it was beautiful. It's just they're lucky that they just come from an era where everybody is very nice and gullible.
My favorite part was that part, though, the Rainer working with Stamets, talking to Reese, you know, just like it was really personal. And then basically putting the phaser right to his chest, talking to Michael. I thought that was really good. Like, really, really good. And people have been saying it. I'll say it. They have great chemistry. Like, they did a great job. I'm going to do it again. Like, finding Callum for this role and putting him next to Sonequa Martin-Green is just like, mwah, chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Great chemistry. Can't wait to see where else it goes. Any final thoughts on this episode before we get into some mailbag?
Yeah, more naked book.
Oh yeah, more naked book. I agree.
Yeah,
fair. That's what I was gonna say. No, the one thing that sort of bothered me was at the beginning with Adira talking to Gray, and I was just sitting there, I was like,
yeah.
It seems like they're just sort of playing it, and hopefully that means they're gonna get back together. I don't know. It just seems weird to start off with that.
That little hint tells me this is part of a bigger plot.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, having Michael go through all the eras of Disco will really help her when she ascends.
Why? Shut why do you have to do that up. To her? We don't want. I. This
Take
is
what. That back.
This is why
Take
I said back. I don't agree with you at the top of the show. It's such. You had to bring that up.
Well, that's how Calypso happens. Is that Michael and everybody else ascends?
They just all ascend.
Take that fucking back, Eric. I'm gonna cry.
No,
I'm not. Want somebody to cosplay the guy who is in like the construction of Disco with his little heart out.
He's so cute.
I love so it. Cute. And I love Raider fucking with him so bad too. He's like, no, you tell your foreman we're going to deck 7 now. Be prepared. Don't be ready, son. Like, I loved it. It's so good.
Like, it's such an easy cosplay. Like, wear blue, take a hard hat, like spray painting and put a little insignia on the thing. And,
I'll do
like,
it a track line. I'm done. Oh man. All right, let's hit those personal transporters. And get into the subspace to pull and mailbag.
Lieutenant Christopher, open a channel.
Channel's open.
All right. Who wants to take the to pull? Who's got it? Who's got it? Who's got
I'll
it?
I'll take it.
All right, MC.
So we asked Trek Twitter what they thought about episode 504, and this is what they had to say. 70% said, hell of a time. 24% said, old dogs, new tricks. 6% said, grumpy like Stamets. And a whole 0% said, a piece of Krennum.
You did well this week.
No one got hurt this week. That's good. Yeah. That means we'll keep going in our order. Eric, can you take Eric the Red's mailbag, please?
This is like Inception. Eric on Eric.
Eric on Eric, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no.
Anyway, Eric the Red wrote, "What a wonderful bottle episode and temporal loop type episode. Very reminiscent of Voyager's Shattered, with Burnham having to remember and deal with different periods of a ship's and crew's history, with some of TNG's all good things thrown in as well. Love seeing Burnham, Rayner, and Stamets learning to work together, as well as Rayner learning a lesson about the value of familiarity. Did not expect Burnham to have to fight herself, literally. Definitely the best episode of this season so far, and probably now an absolute classic for the series as a whole."
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Hawk, can you take Matt Harker's, please?
Yes, Matt Harker wrote, "At first I was nervous about this bottle episode, but it found its legs as Michael began to reflect on her personal journey and even more once Rayner chose to connect with Stamets. I really hoped it could have been Tilly, and hopefully she'll give him his second chance suit. This crew really has been through it. And this one, with a solid dash of Reno, reminded us just how far they've come."
Indeed, indeed. Draft, can you take Collins, please?
Colleen wrote, "I am an unabashed..." Colleen, a difficult word, like right off the bat. Come on, man. "I am an unabashed lover of the time travel trope. So I really love this one. Brilliantly written, massive creativity. Staging and editing, off the charts good. Hard to pick a favorite moment, but Burnham going through convincing the bridge crew, the interaction with each of them, especially Arium, all kinds of touchy-feely going on there. Like my wife and I refer to 7, this one is an 11 out of 10.
Nice.
11 of 10.
11
I,
of
I
10.
Missed, I that messed works. Up the joke, Colin. I'm so sorry. This one is an 11 of 10. Here we go.
Love it.
I did that in post.
I will take Yum Yum Pods, who wrote, "I did make a joke last week about if Hannah Cheeseman made a return, and here she was. This was yet another fine enough outing, but I did enjoy the bottle episode quality and having a weird time travel sci-fi gimmick at the center of it all. There are some laughs had at seeing the wacky hairstyles and wigs put on the actors to make them look younger, and I did chuckle at how insane young Michael came across. Immediately just wanted to get into a fist fight. I'm okay with some fluff episodes, and I don't want them completely removed, but they also don't help the big scavenger hunt feel that interesting, and so I look forward to the season getting a little bit more on track." Yeah, I agree. We are back to the top. MC, can you take Mars's, please?
Mars wrote, "Wow, just wow. I didn't know what to expect for this episode. I remember Julian saying something about this week's episode being really something, but I didn't expect to be on the edge of my seat the whole time. I had to keep myself from yelling, oh my God, every time they time jumped so as not to wake up my family. Y'all, they finally gave us the potential path for Calypso. Though having let it percolate all day, did we move forward at all in the quest? Loved Rayner's growth and understanding the importance of connections. I'm looking forward to being able to binge the whole season and see how that type of viewing will affect the story flow."
Very nice. Very nice. Eric, you take Joe Funnest Frontiers, please.
Joe wrote, "Love this episode. It reminded me of my favorite season one episode, What's Past This Prologue."
He said earlier in the chat meant to say magic to make the sanest man go mad. Mix up the episode titles. Yeah. Hawk, can you take Chris's, please?
Sure. Chris wrote, "What a delightful romp that took the long road to get from somewhere to another where. Really digging the development of Rayner, and timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly things are often my favorite. Also, Stamets existing out of time being ran past so far was wonderful. I miss part of the visuals because someone made it rain inside my eyes during the Arium bit. But this episode was also so beautiful and stunning. Top 5 disco if I was pulling things off the top of my cranium. P.S. Let's dance."
That a Calypso reference at the end there? Let's dance.
No, yeah. I think it's a Bowie reference.
Oh, Bowie reference. Yeah. A lot of Bowie references tonight. Makes sense. Giraffe, can you take Troubles, please?
Trouble wrote, this episode hurt my brain at first with all the time jumps, but once they figured out the issue and started working towards solving it, everything clicked for me. Again, we have an unlikely pairing with Rainer and Stamets having to work together in the end. Also, Rainer can learn the true meaning of friendship. It has definitely a character development and nostalgia episode more than played into the season storyline, but I'm not mad about it.
Agreed. I will take. Oh, I guess I am going to close things out tonight. I haven't done the limerick in a while with Tara. Great episode, chock full with delicious Easter eggs. Somehow, I'm a total sucker for time travel episodes. We got a lot of that tonight. A lot of people love time travel episodes. But I got annoyed by the transporter exception trope. Yeah, it's been. We didn't talk about that. That's like a lot of the time how they, you know, are able to. You know, not which be effective.
Actually, is one of the rare things that makes sense in Star Trek.
Yeah, it's true.
That's true.
It is true. Yep. Nonetheless, I got over it. Lots of fun, great character development for Rainer, and now this week's very rushed limerick. 504 Face the Strange. There's a Krenim time bug on Discovery, uncovering Mole and La'ok's sophisticated skullduggery. Burnham confronts her younger identity. A classic Vulcan defense provides a harmless remedy. Now everyone toast Arium with a Vesper Martini. Make sure that Vesper Martini is ice cold. Ice cold. Yes. That does it for this one, folks. That was really fun, and we did it. I did say it was going to be a short show, and I wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
Sub 130, baby. Let's go. Yeah. I know. We're like doing our own time travel. I don't have a joke there. We are back. Next week for episode 505. Don't think I could say the title yet. So I won't.
Oh, but it's a good one.
It is a really good. Wait, did you watch it?
No, but you said so.
Okay, I did.
No,
say
but
so.
I know what's going on in 505.
Yeah, so,
I've not watched it, but I know what's going on.
So I teased y'all last week saying that this was a really good episode. Well, next week is also a really good episode.
Oh, boy.
So put your pants back on, and I don't know. I'm tired. Let's get this one out of here. For MC, for Hawk, for Giraffe, for Cyclops, I am Julian. Live long and prosper. Majram. Sarcastic Vulcan salute. Good night.
Thanks for beaming into our podcast today. If you want to keep the hailing frequencies open, you can subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. Like what you hear? Put in a good word with Starfleet and leave us a 5-star review.